WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. In the past 2 years, Chicago has welcomed 47,000 asylum seekers from the southern border, and immigration continues to be an issue at the forefront of the election.
The United States Congress, including some of the most conservative members of the United States Senate, came up with a border security bill which I supported.
They've taken their criminals off the street and they've given them to her to put into our country.
That bill would have put 1,500 more border agents on the border to help those folks who are working there right now.
I think they probably did it because they think they're going to get votes, but it's not worth it because they're destroying the fabric of our country by what they've done.
As the number of new arrivals starts to fall off, migrant shelters are shuttering. But the need for housing, and specifically long-term housing, remains. We checked in with WBEZ immigration reporter Adriana Cardona Magigad and with Mimi Wiracocha. She's a doctor of nursing practice who specializes in public health. She's also a mutual aid volunteer who has helped people staying in the Pilsen shelter. Before we got into the details about Chicago, we started with their reactions to Tuesday night's presidential debate.
Yeah, well, immigration is such a central issue in this year's elections. And I just felt... I felt sad, but I also was laughing a little bit about the exaggerations that were coming out of former President Trump's mouth. And then also saddened by the fact that this issue has been so politicized. And we're talking about human lives and people who have been displaced from their homelands. And there are ways to create real immigration reform that offers a lot more services and paths to some sort of status. And yeah. I don't think people want to come here illegally. People want to do it the right way. And it's just a matter of finding a pathway for that.
Absolutely. What were your thoughts, Mimi, as you watched?
Yeah, I think especially as a daughter of immigrants, right? Someone who was born here, first in her family to be born in the U.S. It's really sad just when we talk about immigration or we hear politicians talk about immigration as if they were just not human, right? This is disembodying or just not seeing people as people and families who are not crossing jungles and risking their lives or the lives of their kids, like for fun. They're doing that because of necessity, out of need, and honestly, out of sometimes reasons that we've actually contributed as a country to their home country's conditions, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important for us to take accountability of that too and recognize that people are human.
Well, Adriana, we got word this week that because of the low number of new arrivals, Chicago's going to be closing 3 migrant shelters next month, one in Pilsen, one in Kenwood, and one in the West Loop. So catch us up. How many people are currently staying in these city-run shelters?
Yeah, so we're talking about, according to the recent census from like maybe earlier this month, September, the 3 shelters have about maybe like 1,200 people. About like 535 people were staying in the Pilsen shelter like as of earlier this month. But there is capacity there for upwards of like 3,000, about 3,000 beds. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like so about 1,200 will be sent to other shelters across the city.
And so we're clear, what's the current pace of arrivals? I mean, we remember the days of the busloads coming in per day, right? And if you can catch us up on what the number is now and then, of course, how it compares to what we used to see.
Okay, so right now we have about 5,400 people staying across migrant shelters. The number of, buses arriving has been pretty much like zero for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Okay.
And this is, completely, complete a decline from what we used to see back in January. Like, I was going through some of the information I got from the city back then. We're talking about 5 buses, 3 buses, and like not only counting the buses that were not accounted for because, you know, some of the text, you know, like the bus companies were just dropping them off like anywhere, right? In like in the nearby suburbs. So the numbers have completely, like, significantly declined.
So what changed? What is that attributed to, this drop off?
Well, actually, so many know that the Biden administration issued an executive order that significantly restricted the number of unlawful crossings at the border.
Yeah, this was in June.
Yeah, this was in June, and now people have to, those who want to come into the United States, they have to wait for an appointment through this very cumbersome application process that takes a long time for people to actually get an appointment and be able to cross. So the unlawful crossings have decreased significantly. There are restrictions. There is a number, like a threshold number, that you know, this executive order put in place. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, even before that, the crossings were starting to slow down, but not as much. So right now, it's why we're seeing so many, like, not a lot of people coming into Chicago anymore.
Interesting. So let's bring you in here, Mimi. I mean, when you hear this, right, that shelters are closing, what are your reactions and concerns for how this is going to affect people?
Yeah, so with shelters closing and just people being displaced in general, we always have to think about the effects that that has on family members, on working parents, on children's mental health. Also, the timing of this, right, where I'm thinking we are a couple weeks into CPS calendar, so kids are already trying to go back to school, and now are going to be faced with the question of, do we, when we move to a different shelter, travel all the way back to the school where we have resources that we can actually, you know, bilingual resources that our kids can access, or do we switch to a different school that might not have those same resources? And mm-hmm. I think that's something that is really important for me is thinking of, when you think about public health or an education, is a big part of that and being able to afford that access to those resources, because some places don't really have that.
What do you think about the city saying that the Pilsen shelter is at half capacity?
That's a great question, because the warehouse isn't supposed to have any capacity, first of all. We have to start there, right? This is a warehouse that does not have accurate living quarters and conditions. It wasn't designed for living. It was designed as a warehouse. And so you can tell me, well, we made a 1,000 people, that was like their cap. Well, first of all, they went over that. So if you're half capacity, well, that number was just a number that we created. Mm. That wasn't a number that was ever meant to be more than zero.
It's changed a lot since the first group of people were bused to Chicago. I mean, we all remember, as I said, the busloads that were coming in. Also, at that time, people living at police stations, sleeping at police stations, on the streets, outside police stations, because there just weren't any shelter beds available. You helped some of them, Mimi, by setting up a free store. What were their needs at the time?
Yeah, so we were a part of a mutual aid network that started, which mutual aid work, you know, it was by necessity, not by choice, right? We're not just like, hey, let's go help people out. But really, it was a need that we had because of existing structures not being in place. And so people were depending on mutual aid volunteers and just neighbors to help them with everything, from getting them food because they didn't have food, to taking them to showers, whether people opened up their homes for that, to getting them tents because they were sleeping on the floor or they were sleeping outside, to the free store. So that started because we recognized that people were just wearing like the sandals that they crossed the border with, right? They didn't have clothes. And one of the saddest stories that I remember was back in the day, we would just kind of get people's orders back when we had maybe only like a dozen folks, go to the store, fund, you know, crowdsource some money, come back and say, okay, we have these underwears, we have these shoes, we have whatever it is that we could afford. Seeing grown men fighting over a pair of underwear is just so heartbreaking.
Wow.
So those were the conditions in which we started, and we realized, okay, it's actually like, we're not giving them dignity by bringing all these things and having people fight over things. So that's when we started collecting donations, people buying new items and dropping them off. And then we started that brick and mortar free store to be able to actually have people shop with as much dignity as possible.
Goodness. So then the city started opening up city-run shelters, Adriana, and the fight became about where the shelters should open and how much money should be used to support this. How would you characterize that time? I mean, it was chaotic to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you took the word from me. Like, it was chaotic and confusing. And also, you know, I remember there was this question of like, what does a shelter look like? And are we talking about a huge tent encampment that is going to just kind of like just put thousands of people there without privacy? Or can we figure out a way to create something that's more humane for those who were coming? And obviously it created a lot of tensions too among some longtime residents who didn't want to have migrants in their community and who had a lot of misinformation about who the migrants were and their culture and, mm-hmm. you know, like the way they interacted with people. And so there was a lot of confusion, a lot of chaos, and a lot of lack of understanding on how to actually treat people who've gone through a lot in a humane way.
The Pilsen shelter, which is one of the city's largest, has been notorious for being dirty. And it received a lot of attention, of course, when 5-year-old Giancarlo Martinez Rivero got an infection while he was staying at the shelter. And then he died of sepsis when he was at the hospital. How did the city respond to that, Adriana?
Well, let me take you back a little bit to how the city maybe wasn't responding before that. Around that time, I was looking into grievances filed by migrants across shelters. And in this particular shelter, you know, families were talking about having more access to healthcare, having more access to service providers. And back then, like the shelters were close to community service providers, healthcare providers, and there wasn't a lot of preventive care that you know, families and kids like Carlos could have gotten back then. So after that, after the grievances came out and, you know, we did a report about these grievances and there were so many other reports. We also have like the measles outbreak.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
A lot of that, I think that obviously sent a ton of important signals. Like you gotta have more, you know, service providers engaged in these particular shelters.
Right.
So there was more community engagement or more service providers there, but I think it could have been a lot better from the get-go.
There were so many phases to this. You're reminding me, right? And of course, to keep up with the number of migrants needing shelter, the city then instituted the 60-day shelter limit just before Thanksgiving last year. But I want to get into long-term housing here, Adriana, because when migrants leave the shelter, ideally they're going into something long-term. You've reported on discrimination, though, that folks are facing when they find and stay in some apartments here locally. What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I was recently talking to a service provider. They're part of a nonprofit that actually offers, they connect with families and they try to pay their families' rent for like up to a year. Their program is limited and they have limited funds. You know, it's run by a nonprofit. And they were telling me, like, Adriana, we are having a hard time finding landlords that are willing to rent to migrants. Mm. A lot of these came from maybe like a lot of confusion during the state program that also helped families, migrant families, with part of their rent for the first 3 or 6 months. Initially, it was longer, but then it became 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, with migrants, you know, and the situation when you have a dire situation, you know, in which like you're living, you have your 4 family members, but then you have another friend or another family member that comes in with you, and you have gone through so much, and you know what they've gone through. You feel that need to have them come along in your apartment, and they don't understand how the rules are here regarding landlord and tenant laws, and that you have a contract, you have to obey by that. And not only that, also we have the employment situation where like employment can be difficult. Mm-hmm. So you may be able to have the rent because someone helped you or you got some assistance, but then that rent assistance runs out.
And the housing problem is huge, right? It's not just finding permanent housing for migrants. It's also Chicago's unhoused population, right? That's a whole other issue. And I know, Mimi, you've been hearing some similar issues here. I know one volunteer reported talking to a family who was staying at a home in the middle of winter with a front door that had huge gaps at the top and the bottom. and all the air was getting in, and some families are reporting having no furniture. It just, again, the confusion, the chaos, and the distress.
Yeah, I think what Adriana was alluding to is also the community aspect of it, right? So affordable housing is an issue that we have all across the city, and what we really need is more affordable housing. Talking back to the 60-day exits, about 2,100 families have had to do the 60-day evictions, out of which almost 1,500 have returned to the landing zone, meaning this isn't working, right? People aren't actually having, they're not finding those affordable, and that's in quotes, affordable housing options within 60 days, especially when they don't have access to the ability to work, right? And so how are they going to actually be able to get that affordable housing? And when things like ASRAP are limited to a couple months, and they're being paid up front, these landlords. So to the point of then what circumstances are they going to live in? Well, their landlords are not incentivized to fix those doors, to put in the heat, you know, to turn it on, to turn on the water, to do any of these things, because they get a blank check, and then they can, you know, and also it's hard finding landlords when you only give them 3 months of rent.
So
that's definitely something that we've heard.
Well, the Free Store is hosting one more pop-up for folks to stay at the Pilsen shelter, for folks that are staying at the Pilsen shelter later this month. What should we know about that?
Yeah, so yes, because hopefully, you know, we don't know what's next for the Free Store, because we've been trying to cater to this population, where we, you know, obviously need more affordable housing options for them. But in the meantime, we're having September 29th, we're having a pop-up that's going to be across the street from the shelter. And what we really need are new underwear donations as well as blanket donations. And you can follow us on social media, 11th, and that's 11th Ward Free Store. So 11th Ward Free Store on social media. You can follow us there, and people can find out more how to volunteer or just donate items to us.
We'll leave it there. We've been talking with Mimi Wiracocha, who's a doctor of nursing practice who specializes in public health, who also volunteers at a Free Store serving migrants, and WBEZ immigration reporter Adriana Cardona-Magiga. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, Ellie Gilbert-Bear, and Ari Mejia. It was mixed by Ari and edited by Dan Tucker. Reset pairs nuance and breaking news. So if this sounds like what you're looking for, make sure to check out our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue, as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.